Great to have you along here. This is the third half of the show. It's what's known as the third half of the show. Not too many people understand it. I'm not sure I do either. But it's something we're saddled with, and we're going to stick with it until further notice. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, this also happens to be the time when we invite folks to drop by, you know, smart people, intelligent people, well-connected people, folks who know far more than we do about just about anything, so they can educate us accordingly. And this time is no different. Formerly with the Buckeye Institute, now with the legendary Heritage Foundation, inside the Logic Free Zone of Washington, D.C. Matt Mayer's going to join us here for a little chat. Matt, welcome welcome back to the show. How you been?
Hi, Brian. I'm doing great. And, hey, just want to make sure, quick correction, I'm actually in Ohio, still in Ohio, so don't throw lump me into that swamp. That's D.C.
Oh, no, I was just throwing in the Heritage Foundation. Hey, that's their problem. Yeah, I'm just saying, you just have to get out of the train station and walk a couple of blocks up the street and then make your escape whenever you can.
Yeah, you bet I do. You bet I do.
By the way, there's a little restaurant. Well, never mind. We'll talk about that later. But as long as we're talking about D.C. for just a moment, any chance that you'll be in town for CPAC in a couple of weeks?
I won't be attending CPAC this year, so no, I'm going to miss it. You going?
Yeah, we'll be broadcasting again from there. We try to do it every year. I think we've been about 5 years in a row, and just like to find out if friends are going to be around, if we can come by the broadcast booth and yap it up a little bit, or go reduce the inventory in the bar after the show's over, things like that. But I'm sorry, we'll miss you. But next door in Indiana, I understand that if they haven't done it already, they are about to pass all the necessary paperwork and legislation to turn Indiana into a right-to-work state. And that's got some folks really interested, not the least of whom is Joe Hallett. I was reading an editorial by him in the Columbus Dispatch about this whole thing taking place next door. From your perspective, and knowing that you've had your fingers on the pulse of so much of this for so many years, what is your take on this? Is Indiana's move going to represent anything other than just, well, that's next door and none of our business, or could it serve as a large magnet to businesses that have about had it with the union shops here in Ohio?
It's going to be a giant magnet, and kudos for Indiana for the Republican legislature there and the governor for having the guts to really do this. It's a big move, and I got to tell you, if I'm Illinois, Michigan, and Ohio, I'd be real worried. And let's get concrete here. I don't want to just kind of give you the vague idea. Remember about a year and a half ago, Continental Plastics, Toledo Company. Had a regulatory issue with the Ohio EPA. Indiana said, oh, we don't have that kind of crap here. And they moved right across the state and set up shop elsewhere, right?
Right.
So you think if a company was willing to move out of Ohio and over to Indiana on a regulatory environmental issue, they're not going to do it on an issue that has to do with the single greatest cost of a company, which is labor, and more importantly, the flexibility with that labor. And we both know unions have little flexibility with those union contracts and unfair labor practices. So this is going to be an issue that will absolutely drive some Ohio companies to seek better pastures over in Indiana.
Well, I'm looking around and different news accounts and so on. As much as that would seem to encourage at least Ohio, you don't really know a whole lot to say about Michigan or whatever, but the Illinois, I know their taxes over there are kind of exciting. But I don't get the sense that Governor Kasich is all that warm to the idea. I mean, it kind of bothers me a little because there's a principle of freedom here, freedom of choice and, freedom of the individual to associate and all those other things. And the governor seems to be making a more of a political move because he doesn't want to take on the unions.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, the governor does not like this issue, has not liked this issue, and this issue really is a core issue of worker freedom. I mean, the right of a worker to not join a union, right? It gets that core association interest that's rock solid in our Constitution. And, this is one of those things where, the data is so clear on this. And look, you could be a huge union fan, love unions, but you have to stop denying the reality that over the course of the last 21 years, states that protect the rights of a worker have absolutely nearly doubled the number of jobs created, have created 36% job growth compared to 12% job growth in the forced unionization states like Ohio. And that, by the way, they nearly doubled the number of jobs net with having 65 million fewer people in those states. So states that protect the rights of workers, those 22 states and if Indiana's the 23rd, are a basket of job creation that is not occurring in these states up here in the north where you're forced to join union and whether it's the labor cost issue or, again, it's that inflexibility in the work environment that creates massive amounts of problems for companies in a globally competitive environment.
Yeah, it's always been rather astounding to me that the simple and compelling message that you just very eloquently laid out for us, you know, seems to be perpetually missed. And I understand that that it contradicts the narrative, doesn't fit in the paradigm, it threatens the membership dues for the guys in the suits that run the unions with their six figure salaries and country clubs and all the rest. But it's difficult to understand why folks just anyone can't grasp the idea that it forces people to be members of a group that they may not necessarily want to be a member if they're not a member of the union, and then the union negotiates wages and benefits for everybody else. Well, then fine, they can go ahead and benefit from it. But if you don't want to be a dues payer, if you want to negotiate your own deal with management, then I really have a difficult time understanding why rank and file union members fight that so hard.
Well, I mean, because you're right, they've been fed that Kool-Aid for decades by the union leadership, right? That's just not true. I mean, here's the reality. I am quite confident there are union members in Toledo who don't have a job, and my guess is in their quiet moments outside of the union hall and away from their union stewards, if you ask them, would you rather have a job and weaker unions, right? The freedom for your neighbors to choose, but the unions are going to be weaker, but you're going to have a job because we're going to actually have job creation happening in Ohio. Would you rather have that, or you want to continue to have no job, but boy, you've got labor controlling the state of Ohio? My guess is even union members, and by the way, polling data supports this, union members also say, let's have the right for workers to choose, so that way we have job creation. And look, this is an economic issue as well. The bottom line is, states where the worker has a right to choose, they create far more jobs as a percentage of this growth. Again, 36% over the last 21 years compared to 12% in states like Ohio just last month. And if I'm the governor and I'm the folks in charge, if they want to do one thing that's going to turn this economy around in Ohio, that's the one thing. It's even more important than lower tax rates is the rights of workers to choose and for companies to be able to compete in a global marketplace. That's what you should do, because what it allows us to do is escape what we're in, which is 200,000 jobs created across America, but not in Ohio. We lost jobs here in Ohio. The private sector lost 6,400 jobs last month. So you tell me, as the rest of America is growing, Ohio's falling further behind. That is not the route to prosperity. Ohioans need to change. We need a rapture from the past. And if we don't get that, as Indiana changes, we're going to fall behind. Even our friends now that are changing with the times, we're going to be locked in the blue model of the 1900s.
Well, it's interesting because that editorial by Joe Hallett went back to 1958. Talked about how the corporate folks tried to get a right-to-work issue passed. They got clobbered. The Republican Party was voted out. And if anything, the unions just got stronger. And he's trying to cite parallels to last November with SB 5. We all know what happened there. I understand that politicians are primarily concerned about keeping their hands on the levers of power and staying in office and remaining employed. But at the same token, correct me if I'm wrong, but as these businesses and people exit the state, this becomes a prima facie case for why roads suck, schools suck, property values are going down, tax revenues are falling short, cops are getting laid off. You don't know, all these things that the unions say they want, they are, in fact, destroying by their own intransigence.
Well, let me give you some data behind that. 21 years ago, the percentage of government and government-dependent jobs in Ohio was about 24% of all non-farm jobs. Today, it's out now up to 32%. So roughly a third of every job that's a non-farm job in Ohio is a government or government-dependent job, i.e., you know, education, right? That's dependent on government money in order to
right.
run those things. And so what that means is you have a shrinking private sector pool that can you know, essentially pay revenues, whether it's income tax revenues, it's property tax revenues, it's sales tax revenues, that allow us to fund necessary government services, the point you're making. And so if we want to have a vibrant government that does, you first have to have a vibrant private sector. You do not have a vibrant private sector in a global competitive environment where you have a heavily unionized and costly structure. It simply doesn't work. And you're seeing that across the entire Northeast, from Missouri all the way to Maine. And that's why Mitch Daniels, not known as a firebrand right-winger, Mitch Daniels, governor of Indiana, is going to push for right to work in order to give those workers that freedom, because he knows it's all about job creation. And he said he's lost companies in Indiana, and they've lost the chance to get companies to start facilities in Indiana because they can't compete with the South and having that workplace flexibility and the wage structures that makes sense when you're competing in a global environment. So this is a very real economic issue. If Ohio has traditionally stuck its head in the sand on these issues, and we continue to be a laggard, if we don't jump on this and we become a leader, we will remain a laggard. And that's what's hurt Ohio for the last 20 years. We've got to change how we do business here. And yeah, look, issue two was a reminder, but with all due respect to Joe Hallett, 1958 was the height of the union movement in America. I'm not surprised that they won that issue here. Issue two, look, why would the business community, right, necessarily care and fund a public sector collective bargaining reform? Right, it doesn't really impact them, only tangentially through the tax issue. Whereas the private sector right to freedom issue, that worker freedom issue, that goes right to their bottom line, right? Profits, losses,
yeah.
Ability to expand their company. So the idea that they wouldn't help fund and beat back that $42 million in union money that came out for issue two compared to the $9 million that the governor was able to raise, I think my sense is you're going to have a strong business community to support if Ohio ever moves in this direction, because they understand their companies will not be able to continue to compete against the South and West of the U.S., let alone China and India.
Well, two things on that. First off, not to overwork Hallett's piece, but he claims that there's an Ohio Tea Party group gathering signatures to put a right-to-work initiative on the ballot this November, which seems to be a pretty fast work if they can actually pull that off, and whether or not they can work up ahead of steam, especially coming on the heels of the SB 5. I mean, I understand that the labor union shot a tremendous wad trying to, you know, dealing with that campaign, and maybe they don't have a whole lot of money left, especially since they're going to be shoveling it off to Obama. But what is your take on that? If they actually were successful in getting it on the ballot this November, pass, not pass, snowball chance in hell? What do you think?
Well, I actually don't think that's necessarily their goal. I think you've got, you know, Maurice Thompson at the 1851 Center has drafted language that's been submitted to the Attorney General. He rejected the first language, so Maurice went back and did a second draft of that. You know, Chris Littleton has been working on this issue aggressively, and I think the goal there and the point that they're trying to say is, look, we have to have something that begins the conversation in Ohio, because the legislature and the governor are too timid to do this. So we've got to do this and start the conversation, because they, I think they understand, right, that you're going to have an education campaign that educates the business community on why they should support this, that educates, you know, Ohioans from all walks of life to understand why this is not an anti-worker issue. This is a pro-worker issue. This is about economic freedom. This is about Ohio being competitive and creating jobs and prosperity across the state, right? So you have to have that education campaign, because we all know, and now we know from issue two, the unions will view this as ground zero. They will pour tens of millions of dollars into maintaining the status quo because of their ability to do that here in Ohio, because it's a little bit more labor-heavy than Indiana is, let's say. So we know there's going to be that education process. And so I think Maurice and Chris and all the folks working on this understand it's not a 2012 issue. It's more like a 2013, 2014 issue. But you've got to start the conversation sometime. And what we're seeing is there's no political leadership to have the conversation. We'd rather, you know, throw more money into Jobs Ohio, or we'd rather, you know, pretend if we you know, pass another bill on people driving the wrong way on a highway, that somehow that's going to correct the problems we have here in Ohio. No, we've got to free our workers. We've got to free our companies so that they can compete.
That's a great point. I'm of course Maurice is on here quite a bit, Chris. Yep. Every now and then we'll have to unite with them to help them get that education process started and on a continuum. There was one question I neglected to ask you when we were speaking a little bit earlier on this whole right to work issue, because you've got all those stats right there at your fingertips. One of the primary cliches that you hear from the other side, right to work for less. Yeah, you work for that right to work for less state. See what happens. I got to figure that. I haven't lived in Texas since the late 1960s, and some other right to work states. But I mean, I know that they're blowing and going, and they're doing a wonderful situation. Is it actually true that someone working at job A in Ohio using that same job A in Texas is going to make less money, or is that just a sleight of hand trick based on union dues, taxes, and other things?
Well, you know, I don't need to even go down south for you. Why don't you go talk to any worker who works for Honda, which has been able to fight off the unions here in Ohio, and ask them if they feel like they're low-paid grunts in a sweatshop. They're very happy workers. They make pretty good wages. And that's why this issue is broader than just about how much you get paid. It's about that flexibility on the workspace. It's about saying to the guy when the line shut down, hey, could you pick up a broom and maybe go sweep up some area and get cleaned up? And he'll say, well, of course I will. Why wouldn't I? Versus, no, that's not my job. I'm going to file an unfair labor practice if you make me do that, right? It's the idiot in Toledo that filed a grievance because a coworker shut off the pump to stop flooding from happening instead of calling him in the middle of the night that he could get overtime, right? It's that union mentality that cost in terms of flexibility and drives up the cost of doing business. So the issue is, you know, the wages are going to be dependent upon what the market bears, right? So if somebody has an artificially high wage because for 30 years Chrysler, GM, or Ford gave all into the unions, and now they have to essentially dial that back, and they're dialing it back even in the unionized plants here in Ohio. They're getting paid less than they were. New workers are getting paid significantly less because, again, it's not about whether you're in Ohio union or you're in Alabama non-union. It's about, can you compete in the global marketplace and make a car that people are going to buy at an affordable price? And if your labor and your pension costs are driven up because of the unions, and they're driven up arbitrarily high above the market rate, guess what? No one's going to buy your car, and you're going to go bankrupt and need a government bailout. So that's the reality, and this is what's going to give our companies the flexibility to really control the work environment, control wages, so that way we can compete and grow jobs and have broader-based prosperity here in Ohio that we haven't had in a while, and we got to return it back, or we're going to start losing more and more people down south.
You're here. Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Matt. It's great having you put together in nice bite-sized chunks for us there so that we can all get our brains wrapped around it. Thanks. Thanks again. Again, I'm sorry I won't be seeing you at CPAC, but I look forward to having you back on the show here as soon as possible.
Yeah, anytime you want me on, you know I'll come on.
Appreciate it much. Matt Mayer, Heritage Foundation.